Treat Dad this Father's Day with great gifts from Menards. From levels, nailers, and drills to complete any project, to tool chests, recliners, and grills, we've got the perfect gifts to make this Father's Day one to remember. Stop by your local Menards today and save big money on gifts for Dad. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Rodeo Goat in Edo.
Presented by Michelob Ultra.
Here's Will Kunkel.
What's going on, Houston? This is Kicking It with Kunkel, live at the Rodeo Goat. Brian seems to have made up a bit of a decision on what he's going to order.
Yeah, cocktail-wise, at least.
You're going to get a little drinky poo, huh?
This will not be the most drinky I've got on remote. We've done a couple remotes at breweries and distilleries. I got pretty drinky there. No, but the top cocktail in the back of their menu is something they call the BLTX, Blackberries, Lemonade, and Texas Whiskey. I love the combination of lemonade and whiskey. So at some point before I'm done here at 6 o'clock, I will order one of these for sure.
I'm here for it. I love that for you. They're also doing
that sounded judgmental as hell.
No. You're doing great, sweetheart. They're doing a soccer skee-ball style ticket giveaway. Two tickets to a game here in Houston to the FIFA World Cup. It starts at 2 o'clock, so that's in about an hour. It's going to run till 4:15. So what you got to do is kick a soccer ball into a skee ball style kind of ramp, and the highest amount of points advance to the final eight, and then you can win tickets from there. So a good old-fashioned competition. And I'm looking at some of the prices. The first game here, it looks like it's the Germany game going for $444. The Portugal-Congo game, $850. Netherlands and Sweden is $620. Portugal and Uzbekistan, throw the records out when they meet. That's $918. So you're going to win two tickets.
That's a huge, huge
FIFA
getaway.
FIFA does money well.
Golly.
FIFA does profit well.
But shout out to Mick Ultra for the giveaway on that. Come on down here, get some cocktails, get some burgers. Will Kunkel, you can come down here and kick it with Kunkel and also kick the soccer ball to win some free prizes. Okay, so here's the conversation, Brian, that we kind of led into is can you win consistently in the NFL with a defensive-minded head coach? And I had Mark Schlereth on, affectionately known as Stink, on my show, Kicking It with Kunkel, and I asked him this question. And his answer was, you know, you can win, you can. But the problem is the way a defensive-minded coach thinks is that they're always kind of defending and protecting their defense. So, you know, you play more conservatively. You want to run the ball, control the clock, put your defense in good positions, which I don't have a problem with in general if that's the kind of roster you've built. But my biggest issue with a defensive head coach is that the NFL is an offensive league. And if you don't have an OC, you're always trying to find an OC, which means your offense is struggling. And if you have an OC, you're going to lose your OC because every head coach needs to be offensive-minded in order to seemingly kind of win in the league. You know, every team's trying to find that offensive genius. They're not trying to find the defensive genius. They're trying to find who's the next Sean McVay, next Mike McDaniel, Andy Reid, whoever it might be. I love D'Amico Ryans as a head coach. I think the number one goal as a head coach is you want to be a leader of men. You want to transform a building if it needs transformation. And you want to have that culture. And D'Amico Ryans has done that. And he's done it at a very, very high level. But now we're in a position where the Texans are trying to figure out the offense. And whether it's we don't have the right quarterback or we don't have
4 years running.
Yeah. Or we don't have the right OC. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but that's why the question is, well, if they had the offensive head coach like a Ben Johnson,
right,
like the Bears have seemingly kind of skipped that line of the Texans because they have, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Caleb Williams is light years better than C.J. Stroud. But I will sit here and tell you that Ben Johnson is light years better at offensive game planning than Bobby Slowick and Nick Caley.
The Bears have also, I think, drafted better as far as the skill players to put around said quarterback with Colston Loveland, obviously getting Roma Dunze and Luther Burden this last year. Like, they've drafted really well to put the skill position players around them. Texans have kind of had Nico and a bunch of guys as their skill players. You're wincing as if as if you disagree. That's fine. Like,
we'll
see what Tank. Like, Tank was great as a rookie. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, missed big chunks of first year and second year, and then missed all of what would have been his third season. But I think it's a combination of things. And that was the conversation before they hired DeMeco. And I have no problem with that decision, and I think the Texans will be a very consistent winner with DeMeco because of the culture, because of the defense, because of all those things you mentioned that DeMeco brings. But I look at the defensive Super Bowls won, like last year with the Seahawks, as more as one-offs, right? I don't see the dynasties being possible in today's NFL with a defensive-minded head coach. People will point to Bill Belichick. I think that's – I mean, you had Tom Brady, and the first three – the first three were, frankly, not the same NFLs that we have currently. So I look at, can you win a Super Bowl, DeMeco Ryans? Yes. Can you win three? No. I think that's kind of where the, now, as a fan of a team who's never been to even a conference championship game, I would take the one Super Bowl and be happy and shut up about it. But I don't think, to your point, you have success, you lose the OC. You replace them, you have success again, you lose the OC. You're constantly going to be in that pattern because you hired a defensive head coach. So I think that's going to lead to more up and downs on the offensive side, and you're not going to have the opportunity to have the dynasties that offensive teams have.
So what you were saying about the Bears, I don't necessarily disagree that they've got some really good weapons around Caleb Williams. My, like, cringe face was for, well, what comes first? Because is Jalen Nolan, Jaden Higgins, are they bad? No. Right? Like,
well, Noel was underutilized. I mean, British Brooks was out snapping
him
last
year. So is that
year.
His fault? Is that the weapons' fault? Or is that the Nick Caley fault?
It could. I mean, you could definitely argue either side. But from what I know of Nick Caley's offense with being heavily reliant on option routes, it felt like they didn't trust Jalen Noel to do the right things on the field. Otherwise, he wouldn't be out snapped by a fullback.
I mean,
that's my read on it.
Higgins, I
do hold out hope for. But, I mean, so far he hasn't done anything significant.
I think back to when Noel was out there, or whoever was out, and it was Braxton Berrios' time. Ugh. I was like, what the hell are we doing?
They have so many jabronis. Like, for some reason, people seem to love Xavier Hutchinson, but the first thing they bring up with him is, oh, he's a good run blocker. Well, he plays wide receiver. I don't care.
He is very fine.
Yeah.
He's
your fifth guy and you have dynamic playmakers, you know, at least in your first two or three spots. And maybe Tank returns and he is that guy. You add that to Nico Collins, Jaden Higgins takes a year or two jump, and maybe this becomes a moot point. But from what we have on paper right now, it's kind of Nico Collins and a bunch of guys.
I don't think that what we have on paper is the issue. I think how you use what's on the paper is the issue. And
it could be both.
And how
sure.
to use them, because we've shown that. But also, the Bears aggressively revamped their offensive line, not this offseason, but last offseason.
Yeah.
The Texans didn't.
Ben Johnson's first year.
They drafted back-to-back wide receivers. They could have been more aggressive in pursuing that offensive line like the Bears did, and they didn't do that. And there's a way to win.
I mean, they've tried. They just missed a lot of guys.
Yeah, okay.
They drafted Juice Scruggs in the second round. Who was the tackle
out
of USC? I'm forgetting his name now. Yeah, okay. I've heard that talking point before that the Texans haven't tried to fix the offensive line. I think.
Well, they did initially, like years ago, and it was horrible.
I honestly can't think of a single team that has put more high-level capital, both in money and contracts and draft picks, into the offensive line more than the Texans.
You're right, but that was 5 years ago. That was the Larry Tunsil, Titus Howard, Shaq Mason.
I mean, I don't know.
They did it this offseason.
Other than last year's draft, where they skipped offensive line, to your point, every other offseason they've spent either draft picks or trade or free agency money or repaying, like giving guys like Tunsil and Titus Howard new contracts. They've spent more capital on the offensive line than any other team I could think of. They've just been bad at evaluating the talent that they're acquiring.
You're right. But the reason I'm saying 2 years ago in that 1 year is because that's when we realized how bad the offensive line was, how much it needed to be revamped, and the Bears did it.
Yeah.
So, like, the Bears did what the Texans should have done 2 years ago. Now, the Texans seemingly have gotten more aggressive this offseason.
No doubt.
So they're a year behind in revamping the most important position on an offense. Like, I know it's not sexy. I know the outside of quarterback. I mean, like,
yeah, of
you
course.
Know,
I know
you have to have, even then, honestly, like, you have to have the offensive line, because you can elevate every position if you have a good, very good offensive line.
You can say the same about quarterback. I mean, Joe Burrow got to a Super Bowl with basically no offensive line.
Okay. That, you're right. You're 100% right. But Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson are in a different category.
Yeah.
Like, those are guys that make your team better because they're that damn good. And there's only four of them in the world. That, like, CJ's not in that crowd.
100%.
And there's a lot of guys that are really good that aren't in that crowd. Which is why you need to be really, really good around it. And which is why, like, football is the ultimate team sport. Because you're not good if you're not good at the offensive line, if you don't have guys that can catch the ball, if you can't run the ball. And it also is, like, kind of boring from the standpoint of you got to have five guys that have the ability to be really good on the offensive line before anyone else does their job. And I know that's coach speak. I know that's kind of, like, boring. But it also doesn't make it not true. And the Bears address that aggressively. 2 years ago.
They certainly got it right, yeah.
And, okay, maybe the Texans had a different vision of how they wanted to build this roster, and they saw an opportunity to get better at the wide receiver position and now do the offensive line this year. Well, you kind of, I don't want to say wasted a year, but you kind of lost a year.
They got the order
least.
Of operations
yeah.
wrong, yeah, which has kind of been a theme for them, right? Order of operations.
I do. Every time we see Jalen Knoll have an opportunity, he does well. More so than Xavier Hutchinson. Like, he's more of a playmaker.
No, I think he's a much better player
he's
than
He's certainly
Hutch.
Here's a situation. It has nothing to do with Nick Caley. It has nothing to do with anything offensive. He was a very good punt returner and kick returner. Yet, we saw him endlessly not in that position, and guys fumble the damn ball and blow the opportunity, and they didn't put him in that position. So it had nothing to do with schematics, but the way that the coaching staff runs the decision-making process. Like, City So? That is it. That
I can't believe that guy was on a roster. He was so bad.
No, but not only on a roster.
They said he was going to
start.
Right,
no, he started,
right, yeah.
And it was such a bad decision.
They yanked the plug so fast.
After eight plays, they were like, oh, my gosh. So your
he is the worst player we've ever seen. Yeah.
Either your evaluation is so bad,
I mean, that's
what
kind
you
of
have
been,
around you is so bad,
right?
You have no idea what you're doing. Like, offensively, it's kind of all, it's FUBAR, man. Like, there's too much FUBAR, which if you don't know what FUBAR means, look it up. I can't say it on the radio, but it's effed beyond all recognition is what it means.
I think you got there.
Yeah, okay, I did good. Whew. Like, that's why I say, okay, the Bears have, you say that they have better pieces around Caleb Williams, and it looks like that statistically because they know how to put these guys in position. Like,
no,
I don't think
that's
Caleb
100%.
Williams is that great. I'm not saying he's not good, but he and C.J. Stroud are not that far apart.
I think Caleb Williams is a much better athlete.
Yeah,
I would give him
fine,
that.
That's fine.
I think C.J.'s more accurate.
Caleb stunk.
Decision-making.
Caleb stunk. What are they? CJ's got 1 year ahead of him in the league, right?
Yes.
So when CJ was better than Caleb when they were at that same stage. You know, like, second.
CJ was better as a rookie than Caleb was as a rookie.
For
100%.
Sure.
But I think 27 out of 32, maybe 28 out of 32 would take Caleb if they were given the choice. NFL GMs around the league. Maybe throw out Caserio because he'd be biased. How many of the 31 other GMs would take C.J. Stroud over Caleb Williams right now if they're starting from scratch? I don't think many would.
I think you're probably right. But I also don't think that the list – I don't think there's 10 quarterbacks in between you get to C.J. So to say you take Caleb Williams over
C.J. I think
C.J.
would be great
CJ.
If he was playing for Ben Johnson.
Okay, there's the comp right there. That's a great – I don't know why I couldn't get there. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you put C.J. in that offense. I think they're like – equally as fine, maybe better. Like, I don't know.
It's different.
I had DJ Moore on my show, Kicking It with Kunkel, and DJ shined a lot of light on how difficult that offense is to kind of learn.
After the trade?
After the trade, yeah. and also like kind of some things that went wrong. First of that interception that ended their season. You know, DJ Moore got a lot of heat because it looked like he wasn't running, when in reality that play was installed on Wednesday, and a lot got screwed up on the field to where it was like, well, this is going to kind of end poorly. So there's things like that we don't know, and then he shines some light on. Like, I don't know. This is all like what if, what about isms and what if isms. I just like the Nick Caley thing. You keep Nick Caley, and I've harped on this forever, and I'll do it again. Is there's no one to replace Nick Caley if this goes wrong.
Yeah, like, well, here's the, I think the bigger issue with that. So let's say year two for Nick Caley goes like it did for Bobby. They decide the end of the year that it's time to find a new OC. I think we'd all be in favor of that. But who's picking that OC?
Well, exactly.
The same people that gave us Bobby Slowick and Nick Caley. So we can hope for a change to the play caller. Maybe they find lightning in a bottle with a guy. But if the same guys, kind of like the offensive line until they – we think kid on nursery, they can pick new guys all they want, but if it's the same decision makers picking it that have failed over and over again before, why would you have confidence they'll get it right on the 10th try when they didn't the previous nine, you know?
Not only that, but it's you're picking, your pool of who you're picking is a lesser pool of candidates, like they're not qualified as
now, why
much,
would you say that?
As if you were hiring for a head coach. So obviously when you're hiring for a head coach, you're hiring potentially like the best of the best of what you're trying to gain, right? Like it's the highest job on the totem pole of coaching. And when you're hiring a coordinator, what you're doing is trying to find a quarterback's coach, a tight ends coach, a passing game coordinator that is now ready to be an offensive coordinator, or a offensive coordinator that was fired.
I would hope they would go with a more experienced person the third
time
around.
Okay, so did I.
I know.
The
I
last
know.
Two times I thought that.
Wish in one hand, poop in the other, right?
Like, they've now not hired an experienced offensive coordinator twice.
I do think it, I mean, you may disagree. It sounds like you may disagree. I do think it's an attractive job.
It's an extremely attractive job.
In that, there's skill around that you can do things with. And if you're the OC, in a hypothetical world where Stroud still doesn't play well this year, if you turn Stroud around, the credit you would get for that,
then you're gone right away.
Exactly.
Which, yes, I agree entirely. But here's my issue. I think it's a very attractive job because you don't actually have to be good. You just have to be good enough, which is like the worst thing you could possibly be, is like always just be good enough and never actually be good. Ron Rivera always kind of talked about that when he was a head coach. But that's all you have to do with this team, is because it's a defensive team and it's an elite defensive team. So you don't have to score 28 a game.
No.
You don't have to score 35 a game. All you got to do is gain some first downs, convert some
third
downs.
Just be the reason that
team doesn't
lose.
Like, don't lose the game. Like, manage the offense and then worry about scoring points. And if you can score points, you're going to be a head coach in the blink of an eye. Bobby Slowick was getting head coaching interviews.
He got interviews this last after year two, before they fired him.
And he's an OC right away. I just don't understand why they're not going after, like, you're not hiring Ben Johnson as your OC. Because when he was with the Lions, because he was an OC in a great spot. So you're losing out on that opportunity because you're not hiring the head coach.
Yeah, you either got to hire like a retread or somebody that's taking a step up.
Right, and you got to be right about it. Like, you got to be right about someone that hasn't done it. You got to be right about Nick Caley, who hadn't called plays. You got to be right about Bobby Slowick, who hadn't called plays. You got to be right about somebody who hasn't done it because you're hiring an OC spot, versus if you were hiring a head coach, you could go out and get Ben Johnson, who has done it, and now he wants to be within the Texans organization because he gets to be a head coach.
You know where I think they've gone wrong with their hires, and this is obviously without the benefit of being in the room and seeing what they see, but they've hired two guys so far, and Bobby Slowick and Nick Caley, who both very obviously are not the reasons for their team's offensive success. Bobby Slowick was not the play caller. That offense is Kyle Shanahan. Nick Caley was not the offense. Sean McVay is that offense, right? So they've hired two guys that were kind of just, for lack of a better term, and maybe to put it too harshly, clingers on to two of the brighter offensive minds in football. I would like to see them, if they do go with the unproven route, go with someone that maybe – as an, on the offensive side for a defensive head coach, where if you see that they have offensive success, you can more maybe put the credit to that success on them. Whereas when are you ever going to give credit to a non-play caller in a Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay offense? They're not the reason for that offense success. It's Shanahan and Sean McVay.
So here's the problem with that. What offensive coordinator is there in the entire NFL that is the constructor of the offense that isn't the
Ben
head
Johnson
coach?
Ben Johnson was.
Right.
Ben Johnson was.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not a long list. If that's the point, like,
so, and that's why, and this comes off when I read
Clint Kubiak was for last year.
And
I'm trying to think of names on the fly. Kellen Moore was,
and that's a defensive head. That's a defensive led team, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm
so
talking.
Not
about.
Like, but he's not like reinvent. So, but you're saying you're right. But you're also kind of saying you want a great offense, not like a competent offense. Like, you're never going to hire Clint Kubiak to be your offensive coordinator.
What I'm saying is go after someone who is the reason for their success. Or more.
And how is that possible? But you never would. You never could hire that person. You're never hiring Kubiak away from the Seahawks your OC.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm not talking about hiring someone else's OC to replace the OC.
So then who would it be?
Well,
how is that possible?
You're looking at position coaches, I think, on defensive teams with a good offense.
But you'd have you're never hiring a good offense. I'm like, you're never hiring a good offensive coordinator to be your offensive coordinator.
I know. I'm talking about position coaches.
Well, that they're not responsible then for the offense because they're position coaches. It's the OC.
Yeah, that's fair.
So there's never a tight ends coach that's in charge of the offense. There's never a passing game coordinator. Like, we've seen this. Joe Brady was the passing game coordinator for LSU, the greatest show we've possibly arguably seen in our generation, right?
Yeah.
And it went up in flames in Carolina when Joe Brady was the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, for
under Matt Rule.
Matt Rule, yeah. That was the name I was trying to come up with. I guess to boil it down to more of a succinct point, like, I just don't like hiring guys off the I know there's success stories there. Kevin O'Connell came off the Sean McVay staff. There's obviously success stories there. I just can't look at Bobby Slowick under Kyle Shanahan and Nick Cayley under Sean McVay and go, they're the reason for the 49ers and Rams' success. They'll
well, they're not.
Yeah.
But you'll never, ever. I say never. Like, you gotta get lucky. You gotta be like, I think this guy's smart. I think he learned a lot under Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay or whoever. I think they learned a lot under this coach to become the next guy because you don't know.
You don't.
And you're never going to hire an OC to be your OC.
I guess I would try to look for someone who had more of a hand in the success.
And there's one person.
Okay.
And they didn't do it this offseason.
Fill me in.
Mike McDaniel. It's the one guy.
Might be Daniel
because McDaniel is perfect because I don't like him as a head coach. He's not a culture leader of men guy, but he is an offensive mind that has done it.
I kind of think the Texans would have had a shot if they fired Nick Cayley.
I agree.
San Francisco connection with him and D'Amico.
I agree. Now, he went to become the OC with the Chargers. Like, that's the one guy.
An attractive job. So.
Exactly. So that's the one guy that was on the market where you say, okay, he was an OC, and he was a head coach, and we could get him as our OC because there's no one else out there like that. Ben Johnson, now you're never going to get him to be your OC. You'd have to hire him as your head coach like the Bears did. Bobby Slowick was like a kind of let's see if it works out for us. Clint Kubiak, or is it? Yeah, Clint Kubiak.
Yeah, Clint Kubiak.
Like, he's obviously not going to become your OC.
No, no.
There's no one that's an OC that's good at what they do that wants to become your OC. They would want to be your head coach. They want to climb that ladder. Mike McDaniel is the guy out there that was fired. Like, four other guys would have been someone like Doug Peterson. Now, I don't know that you want to go that route if you think he's the right guy for the job, but that conceptually from a resume standpoint would be him.
You remember a few years ago, and not that I want this specific individual because he flamed out in Washington, but I wonder if the Texans could look for somebody, and maybe this – I mean, this argues against the point I made previously. But remember when Eric Bieniemy was flaming out in every interview?
Yeah.
Obviously was not getting any credit for the offensive success of the Chiefs because that all went to Andy Reid. And he decided to go to Washington to try to prove that he could do it. It wasn't just Andy Reid. It flamed out. I wonder if that's maybe what the Texans should be looking for.
My issue with Eric Bieniemy is that everywhere he's gone, it hasn't worked.
Not specifically him, but someone like him that, because they're under a Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan or whoever, isn't getting credit for that success. It needs to prove they can do it somewhere else.
And the problem is,
if you're looking for someone who's already called plays.
And the issue is, you're always going to be going up against at least 1 to 3, 4, 5 teams that have a head coaching opening that will give that guy a head coaching opportunity.
Yeah.
So you don't got to convince, like, hey, no, you don't want to be a head coach at that place. Like, if it's the Raiders, who's their head coach now, the Raiders?
It's Kubiak.
Okay. So, like, there you go. You became a head coach, right?
Yeah.
You're never going to convince someone unless you say, hey, that place is such a dumpster fire. Then you wouldn't, but Kubiak would never have left the Seahawks to become an OC.
No, but he was
left
getting
to become a head coach,
right? Because he was getting. I mean, Mike McDonald, their head coach, is a defensive guy, so he was getting the offensive credit. I think you'd have to find somebody that's not getting the offensive credit because the head coach is such an offensive genius that we give all the credit to them. Mm-hmm. Someone under an Andy Reid, someone under Sean McVay, under Kyle Shanahan, under Kevin O'Connell before the Vikings offense fell apart last year. Someone like that. That needs to prove to the rest of the NFL that, well, I'm not just a coffee bringer for Sean McVay. Problem is the Texans have tried that now a couple times and it's failed. So I don't know if there's an easy answer there.
I mean, Zach Robinson is the offensive coordinator for the Buccaneers because Todd Bowles is the defensive head coach, defensive-minded.
And they've obviously lost a couple of OCs. I mean,
yeah.
Baker Mayfield, I think, has had a new OC basically every year of his career going back to college.
And that's why I almost don't have a problem with keeping Nick Caleb, because what's worse, having a less-than offensive coordinator or hoping that you find the next big thing, but then also like a new offensive coordinator every single year, and like you have that dreaded OC carousel for guys? Like, that never works out.
So you would prefer...
I don't know what I prefer. It's just like...
the known mediocre to the possibility of horrible?
And yeah, because... I kind of prefer that because then you can at least – you now have a foundation built within the building of last year. So you now know what worked, what didn't work. You have the knowledge built in a little bit. And it's your second year and there's some familiarity versus you got to restart all over. You don't know what you're getting. Like, again, this all comes back to having a defensive head coach.
Now, before we go to the break here, you led us into there, and I gave you my answer on that. What do you believe is the case with the question we led into the segment about D'Amico and the possibility of winning Super Bowls with a defensive head coach?
Say that again?
The question that we started the segment with, can you win Super Bowls with a defensive head coach? I don't know. I don't feel like you weighed in on that.
I did not. I will, though, after the break.
There we go.
On the other side
of the break. Look at that tease.
You're listening to Kicking It with Kunkel here on 97.5 ESPN Houston. We are live at the Rodeo Goat. We are doing FIFA World Cup cocktails down here, all sorts of burgers. The Rodeo Goat has a list of burgers that I have never seen. Something called the Sugar Burger, the Nanny Goat Burger, Ranch House, Billy F. Gibbons, all
Shout
of it.
Shout out to ZZ Top.
We are also giving away World Cup tickets. For real, y'all. World Cup tickets will be given away starting at 2 o'clock in Edo at the Rodeo Goat. 2 o'clock to 4:30. It is a soccer-style skee-ball competition. If you win tickets, it will be to the Netherlands-Sweden match on June 20th. Netherlands versus Sweden, June 20th. Those tickets right now, get in price, $620. So you win those tickets, you could sell them. I'm not telling you that's what you should do. I'm just saying. You win them, you could sell them for a chunk of change. So come on down to the Rodeo Goat in Edo. It is a great atmosphere. Fans are out here, a lot of Mexican fans, because Mexico kicks off the World Cup in just a few, I mean.
About an hour?
Half hour. Who do they play? They take on South Africa.
There you go.
2026 World Cup gets underway here at Rodeo Goat in about 30 minutes. And it's busy. This is great. What day is it? It's Thursday at noon?
Thursday, yeah.
Let's go. Ain't nobody working.
No one's working.
Hell yeah,
except
I love
for you
that.
And I. Well, not really.
Brian's down here. We got Sean Mace back in studio. I'm Will Kunkel. filling in for Rich Eisen today. You're listening to Kicking It with Kunkel. I'm going to answer, can you win multiple Super Bowls or at least be competitive for multiple Super Bowls with DeMeco Ryans, a defensive head coach? I'll answer that question next.
Now back to the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Rodeo Goat in Edo.
Presented by Michelob Ultra.
Here's Will Kunkel.
Welcome, everybody, live inside Kicking It with Kunkel here on ESPN Radio 97.5. We are live at the Rodeo Goat downtown, the Edo area, and it is buzzing. I mean, there are cervezas flowing past me right now. I just saw a Dos Equis with a lime that I wanted so badly.
Yeah?
It looked
well. You're off the air in 90 minutes if you want to get a cerveza.
In 90 minutes, the beers will be flowing to me. We are at the Rodeo Goat, as I previously mentioned. We got FIFA World Cup cocktails, including the Orange Olay, the Red Card, the Copa Colada. We also have a giveaway of 2 World Cup tickets to... My notes just got taken away
Sweden
from me.
Versus Denmark.
Netherlands and Sweden. Denmark. Yeah. The Dutch. Netherlands and Sweden on June 20th. Those tickets are going for $600 a pop, by the way. So if you come down here and you play this game that they got, it's soccer skee-ball style contest. It starts at 2 o'clock, which is in 20 minutes, and it runs until 4:15. So you got time to come down here. You get in the top 8, and then you compete from there. Most points wins those 2 tickets to Netherlands and Sweden on June 20th in Houston. And that's a huge win because those are pricey as hell. That's brought to you by Michelob Ultra. I just ordered the River Oaks Country Club burger, which, of course, it's just like your standard American burger. It's lettuce, pickles, tomatoes.
Of course, we'll order the River Oaks burger.
Course. Well, what are you going to get? The dad bod, which is... beef patty, fried mac
and cheese. I
love
that we automatically went to attacks on what burgers.
What are you going to get, fat ass?
I called you an elitist. You called me a fat ass.
It's a beef patty, fried mac and cheese patty, applewood smoked bacon, queso, arugula, and Fresno aioli. It's basically a salad. Because it's got arugula, so it's a salad.
Yeah, it's basically a salad.
On a bun.
Which, if you do want to, I don't know if you saw that option, though, they will turn your burger into a salad bowl.
I did see that. Yeah. I love burger bowls. I made burger bowl the other night. My wife wanted one, so I made some. It was very good.
Yeah. What'd you put in it?
Everything that's in a burger, you know, lettuce, tomato, onions, pickles, you know, and then I put a burger sauce on top of it.
Yeah.
Wow. Ah,
chef's kiss. All right.
Hell yeah, chef's kiss. A debate I want to get into a little bit later, I will tease now, is what sports teams do you hate that you're willing to admit are good for the good of the sport?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. Well, I'll save it.
What sports teams do you hate, but you're also intellectually honest enough to admit you like that they're good sometimes just because it's for the good of the sport? And we got these cups out here, World Cup cups that – they just dropped off for us that are really cool. Let's talk about the Houston Texans, and it's a debate we've kind of been – not even a debate, a discussion we're having about the Texans because they're still going through a little bit of learning how to play offense phase, like not even play. How to call plays.
How to get a play in.
Like they're in
learning how to get to the line of scrimmage in a timely manner.
Yeah, they're in the foundational – building process.
You know, year 4, no big deal.
Golly, why am I stuck on here? All right, I got the cord off. All right, this cord from this headset's got me stuck on the chair. Help!
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
All right.
Can you win multiple Super Bowls or be in contention? Because I think trying to win multiple Super Bowls is an insane bar to achieve.
Yeah, that's a big ask.
But can you be relevant in the Super Bowl conversation year in and year out with a defensive head coach? And I think the answer is no. I think I agree with you in the sense that DeMeco Ryans and the Texans, with him as their head coach, can win a Super Bowl.
Yes.
I think they're one of the best teams in the NFL. The issue is trying to maintain that success will be fleeting and very difficult because you're always trying to be trying to replace that offensive mind. Because once you have success – you're going to be hired as a head coach if you have any sort of offensive knowledge at all. I mean, look at the guys that we've seen become head coaches, whether it be Kellen Moore, Bobby Slowick getting interviews, Nick Cayley becoming an offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak becoming the head coach of the Raiders now. If you have any sort of offense on your resume, you're going to get a bid. So that's hard because you're always trying to replace that and you're always replacing it. I got us the loaded cheese fries.
I see that. So we got some.
Are you ready?
Yeah, fries with cheese and bacon and jalapenos.
Yeah.
Damn.
Doesn't that sound good?
It sounds great.
And it is great.
It is great.
It is
fact,
great.
You're fact checking it there?
So good.
Looks good.
Eating on radio is not as bad as eating on TV.
Lance does it all the time. You're fine.
He's
a Hall of Famer.
John and Lance,
he got to the Hall of Fame eating on the radio.
Listening to them this morning is always fun. They were talking about the hottest, sexiest sports soccer fan bases.
Oh, okay. What was their number one?
I don't know, but they had it wrong because I texted them. I was like, guys, you're forgetting about Brazil.
Brazil's up there. Yeah,
like,
Brazil's up there.
It's definitely Brazil. I mean, my heavens. Trust me, it's Brazil.
is that what you have to say?
I mean, it's just, is it not, every time Brazil plays, it's like, is there a game going on?
Yeah, there's a lot of talent for sure.
Good Lord. So that's where I fall with D'Amico Ryans being, and I think D'Amico Ryans is the right man for this job right now. He has changed the culture completely in that building.
I mean, think about what night and day it is from Lovie Smith and David Coley to D'Amico Ryans.
They were good under Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, like, honestly, I don't think we appreciate that as much as we should. Like, it kind of feels like, yeah, they roll out of bed, win 10 games or more at this point with D'Amico Ryans, which is a crazy statement, but it's been true so far. But think about how, not just bad. I mean, they were just a laughingstock for 2 years under David Coley and Lovie Smith, and they've now got to a point where you think they can roll out of bed and win 10 games every year.
Like, and to be fair,
it should be undersold how great a job D'Amico. I mean, year one. They go from 4 wins to 10, then 10 again, and this last year 12 wins.
To be fair to Lovie Smith and David Coley, they were never set up to have success, tried to have success. They were the scapegoats. They were the fall guys. I think the better comparison is the difference in the building and the culture that is in the building and, like, how they treat other people. And I think that goes to D'Amico Ryans, Will Anderson, C.J. Stroud, Azeez Alshire, Jalen Petrie, those foundation pillars and how that building operates now.
Yeah, you can't leave out the name Jack Easterby because that's obviously part of it.
Culture
like,
building
of that conversation,
guy.
Yeah.
I don't think you can. Like, I don't think you can overstate what D'Amico Ryans has done, because when he came in, no expectations. All of a sudden, they were a playoff team. And it's not like all of a sudden because of D'Amico, but it's certainly a huge chunk. Like, to be fair, Bobby Slowick, C.J. Stroud, like, those guys all had a say in that, turning the building around. Will Anderson, of course, right? But the culture is a huge part of it, and that's D'Amico Ryans. And then you go from that to be like, all right, then you look at the schedule in their second year and you say, okay, they got to take care of business here, 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 and here. Those are their most important games. And that's what you do with a team that's up and coming. Now you say, all right, I know they're going to win at least 9 games because of their culture, because of the way they're built, because we know that this defense is so good. That's a crazy jump to say, I don't know, maybe 6, 7, 8 wins. You know, you got, if you can kind of pick off a good team here and there, to now saying, all right, they're going to get 9 wins. That's a massive jump, especially in the NFL. But now that you're under a microscope, you're being criticized for every blemish you have because you're trying to achieve a Super Bowl, which is how sports works. It's harder to go from 10 to 13 wins than it is from 6 to 9 wins. Or from
I agree with that.
3 to 6 wins,
yeah.
Or even 3 to 9 wins. Because if you change a couple pieces here and there and you get the right schedule, the ball bounces your way, you can go from 3 to 9 wins pretty quickly, at least in a year or for one season. To maintain 10 to 12 wins to 13 wins is so hard. And that's what they're trying to do now.
Do you think they're built and equipped to do that? Maintain a 12-win type of a team?
I think
certainly they are on defense.
Yes.
And I trust D'Amico, but offensively.
But here's the problem. They're not trying to maintain 12, 13 wins. I think they rather have 9 to 10 wins, but have the ability to be really, really good against the other really, really good teams like they're not able to do now.
Yeah, well, not in the postseason. I mean, obviously they had, what, like a 9-10 game win streak at the end of the season last year?
Right.
Like they,
so what
they,
I'm saying
off
is
some impressive wins.
The win total isn't what they're chasing right now.
What
they're chasing right now is the ability to be very good when it matters most. I don't give a damn generally what they look like in week 4, week 9, week 10. I care about how do they look against the other best teams in the NFL.
I don't think they are. Well, okay. Now that you framed it like that, I'm actually going to go the opposite way. I don't think they are built for that. Because, and this
No. I agree. I agree.
Okay.
They're not built for that. I think that's what they're chasing.
Yeah, because, like, I think Jeremy, Joe, and I had this conversation when the season ended. But the Texans, obviously, even going further back than just, obviously, with D'Amico, because it was the same under Bill O'Brien and same under Gary Kubiak. But they've obviously never been able to get past the second round of the playoffs. But putting it to this current team, I think a big part of that is when you get down to, you know, the final eight teams, the final four teams in each conference, how many teams in that group have bad defenses, right? Like you're all
no one's got a bad anything.
Right. That's what I mean. So like in the regular season, they could sometimes just beat people because the difference between the Texans defense and the other team's defense is just vast, right?
Yep.
But you're from the starting point of the final eight teams in the playoffs, everyone's got, you know, at least a top half defense. It then comes down to can you win on the offensive side? And the Texans are, for years now, have been lacking on that side compared to the top teams that then get past where the Texans get to.
Yeah, I think it's more like you got to be really, really good at all the details. And not only that, you can't be bad at anything. And the offense has a propensity to be bad. The offense has a propensity to not do the small things well.
Not
and I
block,
don't even mean getting
not turn
the play
the ball
calls.
Over.
Yeah, I mean like converting third down, scoring in the red zone, like those. That's when it matters most. You know, I did these like preview videos on my TikTok and Instagram. Will Kunkel, you can find me. And when I did the Steelers video, you know, going into games, it was always about kind of like the offense and like how they were going to dictate things and could they do. Could they score touchdowns? It was like what people talked about. And I said, listen, going to the Steelers game, I don't think any of that mattered because I didn't think it was going to come down to that. I didn't think it mattered if they scored touchdowns. I didn't think it mattered if they converted on third downs because I thought that the Texans overall.
Can't score.
Yeah, they suck.
And that's the common denominator of the teams they face in the wild card round, right?
Right.
Year one, they face old man Joe Flacco on the Browns. The Texans win because
the defense is going to beat their ass.
Year two, it's Justin Herbert coming to NRG. Herbert's not ready for the moment. We've seen that in his postseason career. He's 0-3 now. Year three, it's Aaron Rodgers and an offense that featured 87 tight ends because they had no wide receiver talent. Right?
Yeah, who was going to – like the question wasn't about the Texans' offense. It was,
right.
Who the hell was going to beat Darius Stingley, Kamari Lassiter, Jalen Petrie and get open and also block at the same time the defensive front? Like that was the real question.
Yeah, because – and that's been – and I don't think that – I don't think that's, you know – I mean, there's obviously three examples with it now. Like I don't think that's just some anomaly, right? Like, you're gonna have the chance to face some really bad offenses in that first round – and just win because your defense is going to overwhelm them. Second round and beyond, you're going to have to score some points. And the Texans, because of C.J. Stroud's decision-makings, because of their poor build as far as their offensive line, I would also argue maybe lesser than skilled position talent around C.J. Stroud for what poor O.C. play calling, like all of the above, they're not good enough on offense to get past that second round because they can't – overwhelming another team with your defense isn't enough at that point in the playoffs.
It's a pie chart when you get to that stage of the season. You have to fill that pie chart. How you do it, I don't really care. Whether it's 60% defense, 10% special teams, and then 30% offense, I don't care. But the defense can't be 100% because it's not. It just doesn't work that way. Like, the defense is going to fill their portion, and they're going to do it admirably. Special teams, you know, is going to do their small sliver. It's can the offense fill the rest of that pie chart?
Yeah, can they carry their portion of the water?
Without being a negative. Like, can they do their part? And they, right now, they cannot. And this is, I liken the Texans right now, because they are held to the highest standard of winning a Super Bowl, which I think is reasonable. Because I put a bet on them to win the Super Bowl.
Oh, did you? What sort of odds did you get?
Plus 1,900.
Oh, that's worth
a bet. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's worth a bet.
$25 to win, like.
Don't maybe do math. I'm not doing math.
It was like $500.
We're at Rodeo Goat.
Yeah, yeah.
We're eating cheese fries.
The Mexicans have showed up, by the way.
The World Cup's about to start. I'm not going to do math right
now. Fans are everywhere. It's awesome. This reminds me of Team USA and Mexico in the World Baseball Classic when we beat that ass. That's right, y'all.
Your mic went out. I didn't even touch anything. Your mic kind of went out when you started talking trash.
We beat them. So anyway, I liken them to, you know, when you see a pretty girl and you're from far away, you're like, yes, far from good.
Good from far, far from good.
Right. Yeah. Good from far, far from good. So the closer you get, you see the blemishes, right?
Right,
you start
sure.
It's like a relationship,
it's
right?
Kind of also like beer goggles.
Yeah, a little bit. It's like, you know, it's like looking at the moon with a telescope. Like, man, it's beautiful. But then you get it, like, real close. It's kind of an ugly little surface, right?
I didn't know we were going to get moon
takes today.
You
put the Texans underneath the microscope, which is where they are right now. You see all the blemishes. You see all the imperfections. You see where they're really, really,
really bad. I don't think
really
you need a telescope to see the blemishes for the Texans offense.
No, you don't. You don't. You're right. But when they're up against the best of the best in the NFL, that's when it all shows.
Yeah.
It doesn't show when you play the Ravens and they're missing 9 starters. It doesn't show when you're playing the Colts. It doesn't show, like, it shows when you're playing the teams that you
Aaron Rodgers
gotta be, yeah,
or Joe Flacco.
Right.
And
it shows
Justin
on the
Herbert
road against Drake May and the Patriots, even though the defense kind of did their job in that game. The offense, you know, it showed their ass. Although that was such a weird game because it was so bad by CJ that it was like almost
– Yeah, it was historically bad.
Yeah,
it was the most,
like, out of character
most interceptions
bad.
Thrown in the first half of a playoff game.
But that's where they are right now, and that's where they got to figure it out, and I don't know that you can figure it out.
Do you think CJ Stroud just not – because I think this is maybe where the faith you have in the Texans offense, like that conversation hinges upon – you think C.J. Stroud just, quote, not screwing it up is good enough for them to get where they want to go, or is he going to have to be able to make plays?
Well,
because if you think just not screwing it up is good enough, then I think there's reason for optimism. But I don't have a lot of optimism that he becomes the playmaker that we'd hope he'd become after year one.
So it kind of depends what the if the definition of not screwing it up is there will be success within that. Like,
sure, you're not,
you know,
going
what I'm saying?
Out, yeah.
Right, not screwing it up isn't just not turning it over.
Yeah, there's more to it than that for sure.
So
you got to move the ball at least a little bit.
Yeah, the idea of not screwing it up, at least the way I perceive it, is you take care of the ball, obviously, don't screw it up. But then that entails, like, getting the ball into your playmaker's hands, and they then do their job of making plays.
Yeah.
But all that comes with, all right, is the offensive line blocking? Is the play call right? Is the game plan even correct? Like, there's a lot of things that are wrong with the offense way before we get to the conversation of C.J. Stroud. And that's kind of my biggest bugaboo right now, is that the offense isn't a C.J. Stroud problem to me. It is a foundational problem before you get there. I'm not saying there aren't also issues with C.J.
You talking about Kaylee?
Yes. My issue, and I think this really came – like, it, this, the spotlight was put on this in the Seattle Seahawks game last year.
Oh.
Because
they were obliterated. I know the score looks close. Like, if you look at it.
Oh, dude, it was so bad.
I know, but it, like,
you watch that film.
Maybe it was 8 points or whatever it was, but it felt like 30.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
They never stood a chance, and they were coming out of a bye week. The only other measuring stick game up to that point that they had was the Rams week one. Because the Rams are a good team, and it's week one.
Should have won the game if Dari hadn't fumbled. Yeah,
but also, like, if Dari didn't fumble, but, like, they're, like, the offense was
bad throughout the entire game.
They didn't score a touchdown in the game. They were definitely bad, yeah.
The Buccaneers game they lost because, again, Nico?
No, it was Henry Toa lost contain on when Baker Mayfield scrambled.
But, like, if you're looking at one play, you can also then admit that the rest of the game you fell short a bunch to inability to pull away,
the offense didn't hold their end. But, like, if Henry Toa just contains Baker Mayfield, the game's over.
And so your wins up to that point against Seattle were against a horrible Ravens team, extremely beat up.
With
the Titans.
Lamar. Titans, yeah.
So then you're like coming out of a bye week. All right, here's a measuring stick game. You have the opportunity to not only show us, like hell with us, show yourself that you have the ability to beat what we think is a really good team and end up being a Super Bowl team.
Right, right.
Not only did you not show it, and it's not like you just kind of came up short, but hey, here's some things we can tweak. You showed that you weren't even close.
The offense was embarrassing.
It was embarrassing, but it was embarrassing from the standpoint of there was no plan. There was no – they had no plan of attack. There was no goal in mind of like, this is how we're going to attack. This is our strength. We have no identity. They threw a bunch of spaghetti at the wall and said, crap, it ain't
sticking. I don't know if – sometimes these can be hard to distinguish between each other. But I don't know if it's so much that they didn't have a plan or an identity. It's just they weren't good enough to execute any of it.
Maybe.
They tried to run. They couldn't run.
Yeah, I agree.
They tried to pass. CJ had no time because the offensive line got overwhelmed by every blitz that Mike McDonald threw at them.
Yep.
They were walking up safeties and getting free rushers damn near felt like every play.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. I don't necessarily buy that it was they had no plan. I just think they were completely overwhelmed in the gap of the talent and the gap of the skill of the play callers. Nick Coley was just spanked by Mike McDonald all game long.
The moment here's the problem, though. Whatever it is, the moment they walked in that building, they lost because they were that. From the game plan standpoint, the identity standpoint, the execution standpoint, it was all bad. And it never really got better. Like, there were flashes where we saw plays, like, oh, I want to see more of that, and then we never saw more of it.
The only time I can really say where, like, I felt good about the offense, other than obviously the Ravens game, which doesn't really count. Yeah, they're playing a MAC team basically at that point. But it was the San Francisco game? Like, CJ played.
See,
really,
I didn't.
But
because I thought they were also beat up.
They were beat up. Yeah, not to the Ravens level. Like, no one was beat up like the Ravens were coming into that game. That was what 42-0. Was that the score?
And
of that
then people
game?
Want to say, what about the Bills game, bro? They had 36 yards or whatever it was in the second half offense. So don't tell me about the Bills game and Davis Mills is the answer. Spare me with that.
Oh, no, Davis Mills isn't the answer. Like, I'm tired of that conversation.
If he was the answer, he'd be a starter somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason he keeps accepting $7 million backup contracts. If he thought he could go win somewhere as a starting quarterback and get paid, he would.
That's why I just don't know that this – I don't know that it's in it sounds funny, and because you can't really take away anything from OTAs and minicamp because there's no pads. But I'm going to tell you why, on the other side of the break, is what the two options are with this offense and why I'm very optimistic and very pessimistic. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how it's going to unfold. But it's really kind of one of the two. And I'll tell you what those two options are. You guys call in, chime in, text in. On the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. That's the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. We are live here at the Rodeo Go in Edo of Houston on ESPN Radio 97.5. You can win two tickets to a FIFA World Cup game on June 20th. He almost said the Neanderthals. The Netherlands and Sweden will play June 20th at Reliant Stadium. You can win two tickets to that match if you come down here and you compete in this soccer-style ski ball tournament that we got going on. It starts in 2 minutes, but it ends at 4:15, 4:30 time. So come on down here, win some tickets, hang out with us at Rodeo Goat. We're going to have Radio Row going here for the longest time. Come on down, order yourself a dad bod, or one of these FIFA World Cup cocktails that we got between the Orange Ole, the Red Card, or the Copa Colada. And if you're Mexican, by the way, you're like the only Mexican that's not down here. The Mexican fans have shown up in force for this game. All right, we got to go. I got to eat some of this burger. I'm ready to roll. We'll be back on the other side. I'm going to tell you why you should be happy and optimistic and why you should be pissed off, pessimistic about the Texans offense next.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.